I would like to acknowledge the traditional owners of the land I'm recording from. I pay my respect to the Cammeraygal people and their elders past and present. I also acknowledge the traditional owners from all Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander lands you're listening from. Coming up in this episode.
In that past, we didn't choose chiefs like that. We had tribal elders. And so, my family was actually in trouble when the British left.
Ah.
So there was infighting between them.
Yeah, I had my first third world country experience in this country.
Yes.
Like, you know what I mean?
Yes. I know exactly what you mean. People ask me, oh, your English is your second language, you're doing it so well. But for me, literally, it's my first language.
Hmm.
It's what I've spoken my entire life. So, I started when I was three. Remember, the first month I go to Australia, after I'd settled down, I'm fine. I was like, okay, now let me go look for the comedy club. So I went and I saw it.
Hmm.
I know where it is.
Hmm.
And then I walked away.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Comedy Karma Season 2. I'm Aditya Gautam, your host. In this podcast, I talk to comedians from all over the world who now live and perform stand-up comedy in Australia. Today's podcast, I'm talking to the one and only Paul Dongo from Kenya. He's a Kenyan-Australian comedian. He's been performing comedy all over Australia in sellout shows for the last few years. Today's show, I'm going to talk to him about a lot of things connected to Kenya and Australia and comedy. Let's start the show with one of his jokes.
There's other shit I don't understand what you guys say. Like the other day, I was at work and a friend of mine asked me, "Hey Paul, you're from Kenya. You're from Kenya. Is it muggy in Kenya?" Like, I didn't know what they meant. I was like, I get mugged once or twice a year. Wouldn't describe it as muggy, you know? Just a tiny bit thievy, just.
Hello, Paul. Welcome to the podcast, man.
Aditya, good to be here.
Man, the one, I'll tell you the one I struggled with, the word, the English language word that I struggled with, the word polythene. In Delhi and stuff, we call plastic bags polythenes.
Yeah.
It's such a weird thing that we do it. I only realized how weird that is when I first asked for a polythene here, and no, they obviously didn't get it. And then I thought about it. I was like, man, polythene is it's a weird to call something by its chemical formula name. How come?
So we also call it that.
You also call it polythene?
Yes, it's polythene bags because I guess maybe because the Indians sell it to us. Maybe they just give us the name. But yeah, it's pretty common, I think, apart from here.
Ah.
Call it polythene.
I thought it's only an Indian thing.
No, it's everywhere.
Again, I do this joke about why I can speak good English.
Yeah.
How come you can speak good English?
I keep getting asked this, but it's probably the same reason as you, because the British were in Kenya for many, many years. I think they got there in the 1800s. They left. They still haven't left. They're still there.
They're still there?
Yeah, there's people still with their families there, people who've been there for probably four generations or something.
Ah.
And so they're they're white generational Kenyans. They've never lived anywhere else, or maybe they've visited, but Kenya is their home, and they're they speak the language and everything, but their entire family has just been there. Yeah.
That's it. So when you got your independence, was it a bloody thing where there was a fight, there was fighting and they were forced to leave? Was it that kind of situation or?
You'd like to think so, but the problem with us was because it was a divide and conquer thing.
Hmm.
So they put some Africans under, or there's some Kenyans under their wing. And so they elevated them. I come from one of those families where our family was elevated by the British. So we were my grandfather was a chief and by British standards. But in my community, in that past, we didn't choose chiefs like that. We had tribal elders. And so this is controversial, but I think because they still had those colonies right after World War II. And they were oh, don't think we should still be doing this, especially after what we just went through in Germany. I think they just left.
Ah, okay. So, was it weird? Like, they divided Kenya is in the division, of, like in India, the whole India-Pakistan thing happened. Because they just decided that this is going to be 2-3 countries now.
Yeah.
And they just drew the border out of thin air.
Yeah.
There was no logical reasons for the way they drew the border.
Yeah.
Did something like that happen in Kenya too?
I think for us was, because Kenya is, it's a British fiction. Like,
sure.
If you look at all the tribes in there, we have 50 tribes in there. And like some of the tribes had beef against each other. So they're infighting in between those tribes until this day. Like they'll be like, oh, we don't like this tribe. We don't like the other tribe because we were literally fighting. And then all of a sudden these guys come and put you in one location. And then you have your allies, but you like your allies. So you're there together. And so I think that's even to this day why Africa is struggling so much because there's just so much history there. Like a country, basically, you need a national identity for you guys to work. But if you have 20 individual national identities, then getting those people to work together is just, it's almost impossible. You have to like mix and remix them.
So did this happen like all over Africa? Like is almost every country similar
almost
story?
Almost every country. Because like, we were just individual tribes. And like 40 different tribes and like 40 different languages spoken and 40 different cultures individually. And so you find these people like, if your cultures are close, you'd like probably share the same cultural, some similar cultural heritages and all that. But then you go farther on and like people are way different. Like, you know, they do, like we have rites of passage. So some people do a rite of passage in a different way.
Ah, okay.
And like, so my tribe could look down on your tribe on how they do their rite of passage. Like, oh, you guys are not real people. You're not real adults
or
stuff like that. Yeah.
So you went to an English medium school as well. Is that a similar setup or?
No, not really. Because for us, there was, I guess it just depended on the school you went to, like the private schools, those spoke mainly English, public schools as well. So there's a very big understanding of English. So like, people ask me, oh, your English is your second language, you're doing it so well. But for me, literally, it's my first language. It's what I've spoken my entire life. So like, I started when I was 3, like my what do you call it, kindy? Preschool, yeah, was run by a white lady. And so when we went there, we like started speaking English. Like even the songs we're singing some of them in Swahili, which is our another national language, but we're singing in Indian, in English.
Yeah.
I think you're influencing me a bit too much.
We'll do that soon. Yeah, we'll take over and change everything to English.
Yeah, then I went to like primary school and it was a Catholic school. And it was run by Spanish people. Opus Dei. Do you know the Opus Dei?
No.
The Catholic. Have you seen Da Vinci Code?
Yes.
The bad guys in Da Vinci Code.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, so the bad guys in Da Vinci Code ran my school. they were pretty nice. So it was run by Spanish people. And then, but they communicated in English and all that. Because that's, you know, Spanish people teaching African kids.
English,
yeah.
That's so
he was just pure English all through and through. And
so every subject was being taught in English, like history, except, geography, everything.
Except the Kiswahili language.
Oh, everything else was in English.
Everything else was in English. Yeah, but like we have our own like form of, you know, pidgin English, you know, when you mix English with other languages, we call it Sheng back home. So we also have that, but that's spoken now majority outside. So the language you'll hear like in shops and everything is a mixture of Swahili and English.
What do you call it again?
Sheng.
Sheng.
Yeah, Sheng.
So that's again mixture of Swahili and English.
Yeah, mixture of Swahili and English. So it'll be English words with Swahili words up in there. So it's like
you have to be Kenyan to understand.
Yeah, you have to be Kenyan to understand. Like are you going to watch a movie? Unaenda kuona movie. So it's like, are you going?
Yeah.
So you just put in the English and all
that.
Yeah.
Yeah, we do that too. We call it Hinglish. The Hindi and English mix.
But I think those will be like the major languages in the future. Like all those, because now we have like a dictionary on like ChatGPT and everything. We have a Sheng dictionary. And
bullshit,
like,
you do?
Yeah. So
man, like, that's I don't think we have a English dictionary. We should. That's great.
Yeah, man. Yeah. You have to.
That's great.
Yeah.
Okay, so that's why, because you actually studied English all your life in English school. But at home, you were speaking in Swahili?
English as well. So my family, I don't know, because we all went to like proper, like uptight English speaking schools. We all spoke English. And our schools are pretty involved with the parents. So our parents would come all the time and they'd speak in English. So it just became like, it took over.
Ah.
My parents, like, they speak our traditional language, Kikuyu, a lot.
What do you speak Kikuyu as well?
Yeah, I
or Swahili. Speak, which one do you speak more fluently?
Swahili. But my Swahili isn't even that good anymore. I can understand it, but now it's just taken over by Sheng.
Okay.
Yeah, like proper Swahili. Very few people speak proper Swahili.
Yeah, same. Like proper.
You have it on the news and you're like, what did he say? It's like, it's too complex and complicated. You're like, simplify it down, just mix it up. So like African societies didn't have written language.
Ah.
It was all verbal.
Ah, okay.
So even stories used to be told, like there's people who had actual jobs of just listening to stories and memorizing them and like passing them down, and like using just your memory. And like a lot of people say, like that's how everything was passed down. That's how a lot
I had no idea. Yeah. That's interesting.
There was no concept of writing before the British came. You would just like, you'd just get educated just by word of mouth.
Storytelling. Interesting.
That's why you're such good comedians. Yeah.
Fair. Okay, we'll play the second joke, which is...
Again, as you can tell from the face, the hands, the everything, I'm not from here. I'm from a place... much, much worse. Much worse than Kenya. I'm from Adelaide. Yeah.
Man, people outside Adelaide love that joke, don't they? Lose their shit.
They love it so much. And it's, oh my God. It makes them feel. Yeah, I was even thinking about expounding it more. It's like, why are you laughing like that? It's like. Yeah, you just think Adelaide is the worst place in Australia.
Yeah, people, I think from any city, if you make fun of a different city, people love it.
Yeah.
Especially if you make fun of cities which people usually don't make fun of.
Yeah.
People love it. Like, yeah, screw that place. Yeah. So I've lived in Adelaide too for 1 year.
That's where we met.
That's where we met. Great, like one of the best cities in the world for 1 month.
Yeah.
And then just shit boring for the rest of the year. Why did you end up going to Adelaide? Was it for the same reason why we all go, for the extra points?
Yeah. Derek's. I just couldn't get into a university in Melbourne. So. That was the next best place. But I came with this. Education agency. We have those. Do you have them?
Of course. India? Yeah.
To come here to study.
Yeah.
And what I didn't know is that this place, that agency had like ties.
Yes. I also had the similar experience. I also didn't know. Yeah. They have these ties and they send you there because of those ties.
They'll funnel you in there. I don't know if they're getting anything back, but we seem to be a lot in those universities. So you just end up there and you're like, huh, this is a... So very, very, very many people from Kenya. Yeah. It's like, why is
from
this?
That one agency?
From that one agency. So actually, they're very prominent in the Kenyan community, and we do all this like when we have our public holidays in Kenya. So we have them and we do them in Australia, and the agency has the agency like. Sponsors them, and you'll see this agency in conjunction with blah 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 university, blah 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 university, blah blah blah, and you're like, oh, that's why
that's why
we all ended up here.
Sure.
So I don't even think that I could I couldn't get into Melbourne. I just think they were like...
You just got coerced into going to Adelaide. Yeah,
they just sent a dodgy application letter to Melbourne.
Yeah.
Yeah. And then they worked hard on the one
you,
here.
You were... did you have other people you knew in Adelaide when you moved there?
No. Actually, I met somebody. Oh, and something you realize when you get out of your home country is like the world is so small and tiny. Like, yeah, I didn't know anybody until I moved there. And then one of my friends back home, one of my oldest friends, he's like, oh, my sister is there. I'm like, oh, really? Like, I know his sister. So I went and I met his sister.
Ah, okay. So, but when you were coming in your head, you did not know anybody in Adelaide.
No, I did not know anybody. Then the weirdest thing is, like, I sat my first uni class, I sat down and I sat next to this guy and he was Kenyan as well. I just looked in class and I saw, oh, this is a black guy. Mm. So I just went and sat next to him. It turns out he's Kenyan as well.
Yeah.
We just hung out there for a bit and we just chatted for that class. Like, yeah, I'll see you later. And then later when my friend tells me, turns out this guy who I was sitting with is my friend's brother-in-law.
Bullshit. Yeah, your friend from Kenya. Yeah, he's his brother-in-law.
That's his brother-in-law.
What the hell, man?
And he's like so tiny. I'm like, what? It's like I've known them for probably 12 years and then I met his sister and yeah.
From the same agency?
Probably. From the same uni, so probably the same agency. Yeah.
It's a beautiful thing that agency is doing. It's bringing people together in different countries. Oh, man, that's crazy. So you did end up meeting people, even though you didn't, when you came here, you didn't know anybody. How was it moving? So this was the first time you were living away from home when you came to Adelaide. And so how was the experience? How were the first few years living away from home and, you know, living in like a different country? How was it?
I had moved out of my parents' house, so I was like living on my own back home in Kenya.
Oh, okay.
Before I moved, so it wasn't really a big, thing like moving out of their parents' house, but like moving countries, that was something else. I was in a hostel for 2 months before I started living outside of the hostel. And that was a trip because I don't think I'd ever been in such a hostel because we're like in this former hospital.
Oh.
And so I was living in basically like a ward or a tiny bedroom.
Damn.
Like a single bed and like I'm 6'4", so that was a struggle. And then there's like 60 rooms on one floor.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And there's like, the sharing bathrooms is probably like 6 or 7 bathrooms.
Yeah.
And then all of you are just going in there. And when all of you are leaving probably at the same time because you're all going to uni or something. So just huge queues there. Then there was a shared living room with a shared kitchen, like 6 burners. But then if all 60 of you are deciding to cook, there's another line there. So it was quite interesting. But
isn't it weird that because it happened to me too.
Yeah.
I had my first third world country experience in this country.
Yes.
Like, you know what I mean?
I know exactly what you mean.
At what point did you start doing comedy? Where did comedy come into the picture?
I'd actually started thinking about it just before I came to Australia.
Okay.
I didn't like my job back home. I was thinking about moving and I was like, when I'm coming to Australia, what do I want to do? I'd always been interested in stand-up comedy.
Okay.
Like I remember watching my first ever stand-up comedian was Indian. The first guy I ever saw.
Russell Peters.
Yes. Yeah. Red, white and brown. That was a killer. I remember getting it on a VCD. I don't know if you remember VCDs and DVDs.
Yeah.
I remember getting his special on there and I watched it probably like 10 times, and that's how good it was. And so I was watching, and I was like, that's when I started getting into it. Like, that's
man, it's so weird that stand up special from Russell Peters is so many people's first stand up special.
Yeah.
I was speaking to Joe White.
Yeah.
He grew up in Australia mostly.
Yeah.
And even for him, the first stand up special was Russell Peters' stand up special.
Oh, man.
I speak to Chinese people, their first stand up special was Russell Peters.
Yeah.
Indians, obviously. It was just a generational, like, it was just.
I think it went viral.
It went viral.
Yeah.
And it blew everybody's mind. I think it went viral more in our countries, like in Asia, Africa, than it did in Canada and America. I think there were more fans here than there were in America.
Most definitely. Because that's how it spread. Because my sister was in uni at the time. And like she got it from her friend and then she brought it home and I got it and I spread it to other people and I just gave it and everybody was just talking about it. Just like, oh, look at this guy. It's like, be a man. When you see the poor coming,
do the right thing.
Do the right thing. Be a man.
So you got into it and then what happened? What other comedy?
After seeing that, that's when, like, you know, I knew Dave Chappelle. I'd seen the Chappelle show. That's when I was like, oh, he's a stand-up comedian. That's when I started, like, now going into the law.
Okay.
And, like, finding people who I liked, finding Patrice O'Neill, Norm MacDonald, probably my top, like, favorite comedians of all time.
Yeah.
Yeah, because they say whatever they want and they get away with murder.
Yeah.
Get away with murder.
Yeah.
And so I just see them and like I just loved them, loved what they did. I was like, this could be something I could do because I used to do like plays in school.
Oh, okay.
I used to do like I was class clowns, trying to make people laugh and all that. I was like, I do enjoy doing that. So if I could get paid for that, that would be pretty good. So when I decided that I'm leaving, I was like, maybe I'll start. So instead, I Googled like, where's the comedy club? This is like 2 months, even before I got my visa.
Oh, interesting.
Like 2 months, I'm like, where's the comedy club in Adelaide? Oh, what do I have to do? It's like, you have to bring in one person and they have to pay $10 for you to get on for the open mic. I was like, okay, yeah, now I have to find a friend to take. And so, when I got here and I waited 9 months to do it.
Okay.
It was very scary. I couldn't think.
I couldn't
get myself to go there.
Yeah.
I remember like the first month I got to Australia, like after I'd settled down, I'm fine. I was like, okay, now let me go look for the comedy club. So I went and I saw it.
Hmm.
Like I know where it is.
Hmm.
And then I walked away.
The Great Rhino Room.
Yeah, the Great Rhino Room.
Oh, wow. And then 9 months into it, you were like, shit,
nine
I gotta do
was
it.
Like, oh, man, I've been looking at this for so long. And I actually told a friend and he laughed in my face. He's like, what the hell? What the hell do you think you're doing?
Yeah.
He's like, just take me. Just take me. And it's like, okay, fine. Yeah, I'll take you. So then we went together and like, that's how it started.
Did you, how did the first set go?
I think you were there. Were you there?
I don't think so.
No. It was good. I have it saved. I have it on online. I have it on my YouTube channel. My
Did you prepare
episode.
The jokes?
Yes, I'd prepared for probably 6 months. No, even longer. 1.5 years.
Oh, wow.
Because it's like from the period where I started thinking that I'm coming to Australia to the point that I got here, and then like 9 months later.
Hmm, interesting.
So I had that 5 minutes for like probably one and a half years.
Not bad. I think I first saw you in Cranker.
Mm.
Yeah. And I was like, that's a prodigy.
Yeah.
No, I was like, this is shit. No, I did think he was. I thought it was. Man, Adelaide doesn't have many good comedians. Let's face it.
Yeah.
So you did stand out amongst, but that does not saying much. It's Adelaide.
I'm gonna show this to everybody. We're gonna fight you.
Okay, I'm gonna play the third joke. Before that, I wanted to ask you, what growing up in Kenya. What was your sort of exposure to comedy before you started seeing stand-up comedy? Just growing up young, what were your exposure to comedy? What kind of comedy was there in schools or homes or in TV?
So they had a mix. So they had a mix of like you'd have like some Kenyan TV shows for a bit. Then at prime time, they'd bring in like some big like American TV shows. Then at late night, they'd do like movies. So, we'd have like Kenyan TV. And then some of them like had Telemundos on there.
Who's that?
This is like the Mexican soap operas.
Oh, okay.
Spanish soap opera. So you watched a lot of those as well growing
up. Oh, I've never seen them.
Oh, man. Those will change. Have you seen like Days of Your Lives?
Yes, I've seen that. Yeah, I've seen that.
But now it's like a Mexican version.
Oh. So you were seeing with subtitles? Or?
Yeah, with subtitles. Yeah, people used to like learn Spanish from that. They come
bullshit.
And they go so like, funny. Eduardo. Like, because there are like certain lines where they'd repeat it and the people would catch on to
that's
that.
So funny to me that like Kenyans growing up watching Mexican soap operas. That's so absurd, dude.
Yeah, so we had a variety. Like we had Home and Away. We had Neighbors.
Oh, you did have Neighbors.
So we had like Australian TV going on. For me, Mr. Bean. Now I remember watching Mr. Bean and then watching Johnny English.
Yeah.
Like I was into that and I was like, oh, this guy is so hilarious. Yeah, he's so funny. Yeah. And then somehow I found out that he's an engineer. And I was like, oh my God, this is the greatest human being ever to live. Like that guy was, what's his name? Rowan Atkinson.
Rowan Atkinson.
I remember like in my year five English test, we were told for an assignment, we were like, oh, write a composition about your hero, who you'd like to be, and I like put it down as like, I want to be Rowan
Atkinson. That's like, so funny, dude.
Like, if Mr. Bean, he says nothing, and it's so hilarious. And then you go watch Johnny English, and it's just so funny. It's like the whole parody thing of like James Bond. I loved that movie.
Yeah.
And then to find out as well, he's an engineer, because I was smart as well, because I'm an engineer, right? Well, so. I was like, how he can like move through all those things and like be all those things. I'm like, this is like the greatest man ever. Yeah.
So, was there any Kenyan actor or comedian which you kind of looked up to?
Yeah. So we had this phantom group. A phantom troupe. Is that what you call them? Like when there are a couple of people doing.
Yeah.
They're called the Ridiculous Group, and so they did sketch comedy, and it was the best. That was like, it just came out like right after Chappelle Show, and so they were doing sketch comedy, and they were doing like comedy on political events, just making fun of like the president at the time, which was a pretty huge deal, and they were so hilarious, and they brought up so many other comedians who came up on and after them, and they were like doing satire. They were doing, it's just pretty highbrow comedy. They're like doing parodies of all the adverts, and it was just amazing. And like, yeah, I enjoyed them, and they were so good till this day. Okay, one of them became a politician, so everybody hates him.
Oh, wow. That's so funny. What's the name of the group again?
They're called Ridiculous.
They're Ridiculous. And they did it in Swahili or English?
They did it in Chang. They did it in everything. So yeah, they did it in Swahili. They did it in English. So, like, our president at the time was this older man who could only speak, like, slowly and in English. Like, the most pure English you'll ever heard. He has, like, top-tier vocabulary, but he's just the slur and just how he would talk. That was part of the joke, because, like, I am here indubitably. It's like saying all these high vocabulary words. You're like, oh my God, it's so good. And then they do, there was this other guy who was like the Minister of Defense, and he only had a year four. His education only went up to year four. And so they'd make fun of him. Speak like the dumbest guy you've ever met. Can't even speak in English. Can barely speak in Swahili. And he's just like talking rubbish. And, yeah.
Okay, so they were a big influence to you as well.
Yeah, they were so big. Then there was this other show which came up, just the XYZ show, and that was like the Muppet Show, but also a parody. So they had like those stick figures, and they made it into like all the politicians and stuff. So there's a lot of political humor back home, because I guess everything is just so up.
It's so easy to make fun of politics in our countries.
Yeah,
because it's so stupid and it's so all over the place. It's the
greed.
The jokes are right there.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah. The jokes write themselves.
They write themselves.
They write themselves. Yeah.
Okay, I'll do the last joke, which is
like I follow Kenyan on my Instagram and everything. It's kind of strange. It's like, you know, having a toxic ex, me and Kenyan.
No. When you're inside, you're like, can't fucking stand this. But when you leave, you're like, fucking, I missed that bitch. So some stalking Kenya on Instagram all the time. Like, hey, Kenya is getting a bit too cool.
Yeah, I'm not going to play the full joke because we wouldn't get it. Yeah. The rest of it is very Kenya specific.
Yeah.
But that's such a funny joke. For me, that was really funny. I've never seen you do it live. It's because, man, it's such a weird thing that happens to us immigrants who move to a different country after we've grown, like after we're adults, is that you miss your country and you start once you've lived overseas, you start forgetting the bad things and you just miss the good things and you go back and then you're reminded of the problems in the country, and it's like a loop. It happens every time. I stay here for 1 year and I start missing India, and I only remember all the good things, and then I go back and I'm like, ah, man, this place has problems, and I'm reminded every time I go back. But then I come back and then I miss it again. It's exactly what your joke is.
It is toxic. It's a toxic relationship. But it's so good. Like, I got deported last year. Yeah, they sent me, and like, you know, everything was so good. Like, when I went back home, like the food, you just eat the food, you're seeing family, you're having a good time, and it's so great. And then politics happens and you have to go riot against the government. So it's like a horrible relationship where you can't live with it and can't live without it.
It's such a weird relationship. It's so, another thing that happens is, I don't know if you felt this, I'm sure you did, is that when I came to Australia, I started becoming patriotic about India. I was not patriotic at all when I was in India.
Yeah.
When I moved, I started feeling love for the country. Did that happen to you?
Yeah. Because even now, like, I live with Kenyans, a few Kenyan housemates, and like, we watch the news. We watch Kenyan news. We'll wake up like, I was patriotic, and I'd say I love my country, but like, just circumstances just makes it hard for you to live there. And but I'd say I was, but like, it gets you feeling more homesick, and you're like, oh, you want to keep up. Like, I follow so many investment channels, like on YouTube and stuff, just looking at, I don't want to see the depressing shit. I just want to see it getting better. So I look up like all these investment companies. I'm just watching like, oh, I like it, seeing things grow and things being better. And speaking of patriotism, I even got, last time I was there, I even ended up getting a tattoo.
Oh, nice.
Maybe you can see that. But yeah, that's like the shield of Kenya, because our flag has a shield in between.
Oh, nice.
Yeah,
it's like, man, patriotism.
Just patriotism. I was like, I was really drunk. I was like, I love this country. Put it on me, stamp on me, put her name on my hand. That's how much of a toxic ex it is.
Yeah. Is it, man? That's news thing is so true. It happens to all Indians, man. We're always watching Indian news when we're here. For two reasons. One, obviously, we're missing the country and we want to know what's going on there. And second, Australian news is so boring. So our news is so much more interesting.
Oh, my God.
Shit's going on.
Yeah, there's action. There's actually things happening. Like, I watched the 7 News. It's like, oh, there's been 3 cats missing this week.
Traffic jams. Yeah. That's their news. Like, we've had a traffic jam.
Oh, my God. It's so basic.
It's very basic. It's
basic news. Yeah, this is the new boring girlfriend. She's stable, but
What do you miss the most about Kenya? Like, obviously, apart from the family, we all miss our families. Apart from family, what do you most miss about Kenya?
Oh, it's the nightlife. The nightlife is, I think it's the most insane nightlife there is in the world.
So firstly, you're from Nairobi.
Yeah, from Nairobi, I think we're borderline alcoholics. we do enjoy a beverage every now and then. And basically, it's the ease of getting. We were even talking about this yesterday.
Yeah.
Like, the relationships here, like business, like, you know, you have to make plans, you have to make reservations, you have to like pre-think meeting your friends. But back home, like, you'd leave work at 5 p.m. and you'd have a shit day, and you just call your friend. You're like, hey, I had a bad one. Can we meet at the bar? It's like, I had a bad one too. Let's go.
Yeah.
And it's just a matter of a phone call, just going to meet people. And then you end up just like having one, some of the craziest and wildest nights out. It's just so good. I think, the social life is what I miss the most.
Nice. Cause you were obviously, you were living alone anyway before you came. So you must have had like lots of friends and lots of social life when you came, and then you came to Adelaide.
Don't get me started.
After 7 p.m. everything shut in Adelaide.
Oh my god, you have to get to the restaurants before 9, otherwise it's a problem. Shopping on Sunday, you're not able to.
Man, it's so, the nightlife is definitely it's really vibrant in India too. I don't think it's it sounds like it's even more vibrant in Nairobi, to be honest, the nightlife. I think what for me, what I miss is just that idea, even if it's not going out and drinking, is just that idea that if you wanted to, even at 1 a.m., you could go out and eat out.
Yeah.
You don't have to think about it. There will be places open at 1 a.m. where you can eat good food.
1 a.m.,
So there's always something open in Delhi. You know what I mean? At any time. You just have to know where it's open and there's always something open. And that's just like, it's a different kind of feeling when you're living in a place like that. Mm. It's kind of more liberating. Would you ever consider moving back?
Definitely. But that would be not now, but definitely I don't see myself, especially when I get to retirement age, I don't see myself being in Australia. First of all, family is really important. I think a lot about moving back was like, even my parents are getting up there and like, you're thinking you want to be there for them.
Yeah, man, that's a tricky one, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's a tricky one. All first people who move.
Yeah.
Because it's the parent part, because they want to live. They don't want to move to freaking Adelaide at that age. Their whole life is there. Their whole family is there. Their whole friend circle is there.
Yeah.
So they're there.
Yeah.
So it's your choice. Do you, when they're old and they need you, which they will, do you go there or what do you do? It's such a very big problem in everyone's head.
Yeah, nobody talks about it, but like, especially when they're up there, starting to get there up there in age. I went back last year and my dad was like sick and everything, and I was taking him to hospital every week and everything. And you're just sitting there like in the waiting room and you're thinking, when I leave, like, who's gonna be doing this and who's gonna, I have brothers and sisters there, but as well, it's like, I want to be there.
Yeah.
If this happens again, I want to be able to like come to the hospital rather than just talk to somebody on the phone.
Yeah.
Yeah. I want to be present. And then also kids growing up, like I have nephews and nieces and you're just seeing them hitting milestones, just seeing them hitting birthdays and you're like,
No,
you want to be there as well.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it's just trying to see what you can do, and you know, because to be fair, we are economic immigrants.
Yes.
We're here for the economics of the country.
Yeah.
You know, we're here to help the country. We're here to work.
Yeah.
But other than that, it's like, you know, back home is where everything is.
Yeah.
And like we're having Easter and like, you just see pictures in the group chat, in the family group chat, and you do feel sad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's a very important point you're making, that we're economic immigrants. It's a very big difference to being an economic immigrant versus being an immigrant from a place where there's war or there's, because like in our countries, it's fine. Like we can live there. There's no problems.
Yeah.
It's just the economics of it has made us want to come here.
Yeah.
We can earn more money, get better pays and stuff.
Yeah.
But things aren't that bad back home.
No. Like there's people living well,
like
good lives back home.
Yeah.
Like if I had their jobs, I would not think of coming here. Yeah. So it's it's a tricky one. It's a tricky one. Because you come here, Because essentially, my thoughts coming here was like, ah, I'm going to come and like just get the skills and the knowledge and just go back home.
Mm.
But then you get a job, you start getting your roots here, and, you know, it just becomes, you know, a bigger and bigger deal.
Yeah.
And you're like, ah, you know, you just might stay.
Yeah,
you just might stay. And see, every year you stay longer and longer and longer.
Yeah. I think a lot of it will depend on once you get married.
Yeah.
And does your wife want to move back, or is she even from Kenya? If she's not Kenyan, maybe she doesn't want to move at all, and things get more complicated then. So yeah, because I've seen that happen to a lot of people. Once they get married, it gets more complicated. But obviously, Kenya has dual citizenship, so even you become a citizen, you'll always be a Kenyan citizen. So that's I guess a good thing. So I'll ask this question I've asked every guest is, what do you think is your favorite thing about Australia, and then your least favorite thing about Australia?
Favorite thing about Australia, the salary.
Yeah, good answer.
Pretty good. Yeah, it's good. Just basically, I think it's the appreciation of labor and appreciation of you doing your work, because that's not something you can get everywhere. Like you do your work, you get appreciated for that, and you get paid, obviously, but there's the working conditions here are probably some of the best you'll ever find anywhere in the world. So I appreciate that a lot. I like the cities. I like the way you're able to travel around, like moving around. That's pretty fun. What I dislike the most is probably the social life.
Mm.
The social life isn't conducive to Africans. you have a lot of, you know, you have... in speaking about the working conditions, you also have a lot in such that, like, people are working at all times, and like there's people doing shift work. So I have a lot of friends doing shift work. So like and they have to go to work. So their timetables get a bit harder. But I guess it's the same anywhere else. But like, if you want to see your friend, it's like, oh, when are you free? When are your shifts opening up? When are your shifts opening up? It's a whole process.
Yeah.
Which is, I don't think, we don't have that in Kenya. It's like, are you free? It's like, yes or no? I'm free in 2 hours. I'll see you in 2 hours. Where here it's like, oh, I have this and this and this. And then,
Do you plan to move to any other city in Australia?
Honestly, I'd like to move. I'd like to get out there, get to a big city. Coastal city. All the cities are coastal.
Yeah.
But like East Coast, I've thought about moving to the East Coast quite a bit. Also, West Coast. I like Perth. Perth is probably one of my favorite cities.
Oh, okay.
So I like Perth and maybe Sydney. I just might follow you.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Fair. Cool, man. That's it. That was the whole conversation, man. Thanks for having a chat. Do you have any like social media handles you want to give a shout out to that people can follow you and see where you're doing shows and check out your clips that you post?
You could check me out on Paul the Black on Instagram.
That's the name of your Instagram?
Yeah.
Oh my God, man. I don't know if we can say that on SBS, but we'll do it.
I'm on TikTok. I'm on everywhere. Yeah, you can check me out.
It's at Paul the Black?
Yeah.
Well, fair, man. If anyone can have that handle, you can.
Somebody actually sent me a picture. They got a comment on TikTok today, and it's like, oh, Paul Black commented on it, and it's just a different white guy. It's like, I found the guy who you stole your identity from.
Damn. Yeah. No, you can have it. That's fine. Cool, man. Thanks for doing it. Okay, thanks everybody. Thanks for watching Comedy Karma Season 2 with Paul Dongo. Go watch other episodes. I have other comedians from different parts of the world, and we talk about fun stuff. I'm Aditya Gautam, your host. You can follow me on at Aditya I Try. Otherwise, have a good life. Thank you. Comedy Karma is an SBS original podcast. It was created and produced by me, Aditya Gautam, with editing help from Tarun Tyagi. I would like to give a huge thanks to the SBS teams at the Melbourne and Sydney offices, and to Joel Supple for her guidance. You can find Comedy Karma on SBS or on any other platform where you get your podcasts. Go listen to more episodes and listen to more jokes. Go do it!